It's time for Football Friday with Bill Savage, presented by Boyd's Royal Night on Government Boulevard in Mobile, featuring $8 weekday lunch specials, analysis, and insights. The winners, the losers, get ready for the weekend with Football Friday on FM Talk 106.5.
A real treat, too, to have our buddy Phil Savage on for week two of college football. Or, I'm sorry, is it week? I always get confused.
This is week two because it started with week zero.
Okay, week zero, right. We got to get used to week zero. Of course, our buddy Phil Savage, analyst for the NFL and ESPN, ACC, the SEC podcast, also the GM at the AAF Alliance Phoenix, which we're going to talk a little bit more about, and the author of Fourth and Goal Every Day, and our friend Phil Savage. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, and Kelly. Hope you guys are doing well. Survive week one. Oh. But it is, in fact, week two.
You know, that throws me off, Phil. The week zero thing, I went on a little bit of a rant a couple weeks ago when the high school football was talking about week zero, and I was just, I can understand what they're saying, but I'm bothered by that. That's like, that's week one. The week zero thing, I don't know. I mean, I guess when you're born, you're not one. You're
right.
Zero. So
it's
I guess that's the, is that the excuse for week zero?
I suppose so. I've never understood quite the concept either. Of course, this year there wasn't really a big matchup on week zero, so it was almost like a preseason game for the college ranks.
Well, before we get into previewing this weekend, Phil, I want to get some of your thoughts on the first games of the season. And you were correct last week when you told us that you felt head coach Nick Saban was leaning towards starting Tua Tagovailoa for the Tide. How did you feel about his performance in their win against Louisville last week?
Well, Tua put on display exactly what everybody knew he's capable of doing. I mean, he plays with such an instinctive flair. He's got eyes not only in the back of his head but around his head because he can truly see the entire field. And what an advantage to have a quarterback who can scan from left to right or right to left and have the ability to scramble. I thought he was just sensational, and I think it's an indication of things to come for this Alabama offense, which I think will be the dominant force for the Tide this year, quite honestly.
Now, and that's new for Alabama. Usually they depend all on the defense, but with such a good offense this year, the defense is just as good as it always is. So what do you think, what could possibly derail Alabama this year?
You know, I think that the biggest opponent that Alabama has to face each and every week is themselves. And, you know, they've won 74 straight games against unranked opponents. And so they've really learned as an organization and as a program how to take care of business. But, you know, one of those rare games where they have a bunch of turnovers, that simply has not happened. That happened against Ole Miss back in 2015. But it's been a rare occasion when the Tide didn't take care of the football. But to me, that would be the only thing that really could keep them from having another spectacular season. As I told you guys last week, I don't think this schedule presents much of a challenge for the first 7-8 games. Now, I know that people say that Ole Miss is on the horizon next weekend and then A&M after that. But in terms of the depth chart and the roster, Alabama can out-talent most all their opponents until they get to November when the rubber kind of meets the road there with LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn down the stretch.
And speaking of Auburn, they put a big win on their resume in week one and ended a two-game losing streak in Atlanta, beating the sixth-ranked Washington Huskies 21-16. What stood out to you in the Tigers' win last weekend?
You know, I thought they got off to a fast start. Jarrett Stidham, you know, was really sharp right out of the gate. He's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the country, not only just the SEC, but I thought Auburn's defense played quite well. They were able to force Jake Browning off the spot. They had several big hits on the UW quarterback, which I thought impacted the game. And then, you know, through a sort of a combination of things, it was the Auburn defense and some inefficiency on the Washington offense down in the red zone. You know, the Huskies got down there six times. They only came away with one touchdown. That proved to be the difference in that game. But that is definitely a resume win for Auburn. It sets them up now to get into SEC play here over the next couple weeks with a major victory under their belt, and really helps them and gives them some margin for error, so to speak, for the rest of the season. Because to me, if they had lost this game, that would put a lot of pressure on them within the SEC, because we've not had a two-loss team make the college football playoff yet. And so you're trying to break some new ground if that were to happen. So that was a huge win for Auburn and Atlanta.
Well, both Alabama and Auburn have extremely manageable home openers tomorrow. So let's talk about some of the more competitive games coming up. Two SEC East matchups, probably the biggest game tomorrow. Third-ranked Georgia playing at number 24-ranked South Carolina at 2:30. Bulldogs right now 10-point favorites. So what do you think it'll take for Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks to pull off that upset?
You know, I think for South Carolina to win, first of all, it's going to be an electric atmosphere at Williams-Brice Stadium. You know, Bama went over there as a top five team in 2010, and that was one of the few, like, legitimate losses where a team just basically beat Alabama back in 2010 when the Tide went over to South Carolina. And that's the same kind of environment that Georgia's going to walk into tomorrow. So I think the home field advantage can definitely help. They've got to be able to create a turnover or two, either a fumble or interception early in the game, keep the crowd involved in it. And then they need some big plays of their own offensively. Quarterback Jake Bentley in his third year as a starter. Debo Samuel, the outstanding wide receiver, he has returned for this season. So that's a connection that could give Georgia problems. I think the Bulldogs probably win this game, but I'm not sure they cover that 10-point spread. And remember this, when both teams are ranked, South Carolina is 5-0 against the Dogs at home. So Georgia historically has not played particularly well in Columbia.
Wow, I know Muschamp wants that one badly.
Okay.
Later on tomorrow, number 25-ranked Florida hosts Kentucky. Gators have won 31 straight games over the Wildcats. And last year they had to escape from Lexington with a win. They barely got past them. You have any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, there have been some really close calls in this series, but I was on the SEC channel yesterday, and we talked to Steve Spurrier for about 30 minutes, and this streak goes back pre-head ball coach at the University of Florida. I mean, this goes back 31 years. There's obviously a psychological issue here between the Wildcats and the Gators. Florida is at home. Dan Mullen, new coach there. I give Kentucky a real opportunity to go down there and win this game. Benny Snell, one of the top running backs in the country. They got four offensive linemen back from the five starters a year ago. But a lot of inexperience at quarterback, and you just have to think in reality that Florida has more talent across the board, and they figure out a way to extend this streak to 32 years in a row.
Ah, poor Kentucky, but we'll see tomorrow. They can get that turned around. And one last game I have to get your thoughts on, Phil. Texas A&M, and they could surprise the nation tomorrow evening when they host the second-ranked Clemson Tigers. You think Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies have what it takes to get it done?
Well, I would say this. Jimbo Fisher clearly knows more about Clemson than Clemson's going to know about his Aggies, because obviously Florida State and Clemson have played each of the last 8 years. Those matchups between he and Dabo Swinney split down the middle, 4-4. Unfortunately for Jimbo, I don't think he brings the same kind of team to the table at A&M and the same kind of talent that he enjoyed at Florida State. So I think it's going to be a tough day for A&M. Their offensive line against this Clemson defensive front will be the tail of the tape. A&M rushed for over 500 yards last week against Northwestern State. I'd venture to guess that they may end up with less than 100 yards rushing tomorrow against Clemson at home. Look, the Aggie fan base is going to show up in force with a lot of high hopes, but I think it'll be another in a long list of disappointments for them in terms of a home loss. I just don't see how A&M, I think they can stay on the field with Clemson. I don't think they can beat Clemson, though. I think the Tigers just bring too much to the table.
Back of the envelope. Heck, I'm on my second envelope taking notes here, Phil, for my college pick'em for this weekend. As always, we appreciate your advice and time with this. And remind folks, too, coming up this spring about what's going on with AAF Alliance Phoenix.
Yes, Sean. Of course, the Alliance of American Football is up and running. I mean, we've signed almost 60 players now with our franchise in Phoenix. And the season is slated to start February of 2019, but we're having a lot of fun with it. We're having a draft next week for some of the players that we saw at these combines that were held in August. But Steve Spurrier is a part of the league. Rick Neuheisel is going to be our head coach with the Phoenix franchise. So there will be a lot of talent and a lot of name brand recognition in terms of the coaches and the GMs that are involved in this league.
Is there somewhere that somebody, because I have gotten, actually right now I'm getting a text, somebody asking about the Alliance. I don't, is there a website for people to go to find out the overall for it or specifically for the Phoenix team? Where do people get more intel on that?
Yeah, you can go to AAF.com. That's the league website. And they've got information on all eight franchises at that location. But, yeah, we're putting the teams together now. We'll go to training camp in January, and then the season will begin in earnest on the weekend after the Super Bowl. And of course, the NFL kicked off last night with the Eagles and the Falcons. But right after those guys finish up, this Alliance League will crank up February 9th, 2019.
Phil, as always, we appreciate your time and your advice and can't wait to talk to you about this weekend's games on next Friday.
Guys, we'll do it again. Love Football Fridays. Y'all have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Phil Savage checking in. Football Fridays brought to you by Boyd's Royal Knight. And we roll on. Hour number three of Mobile Mornings. Got phone calls with the passing of Burt Reynolds. I've had a ton of text. Favorite movies? You can guess. Gator will be mentioned. Mm-hmm. So will Cannonball Run. 343-0106. We'll take your calls when we get back.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say?
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Glad to have you here. Big thank you to Phil Savage for helping me edit my picks for football for football for the weekend. We do that every Friday, by the way, brought to you by Boyd's Royal Knight. And looking at, speaking of playing the theme from Smokey and the Bandit, do you see one of the texters earlier said, this is something that would happen to me. He said, I was listening to Eastbound and Down as you were playing it. I looked down and I was doing, what was he? And I'm not going to name his name so he doesn't get in trouble. We won't give you his driver's license number, but I think I've lost it now. But they were going across the Bayway and they were moving along at a fast pace here. We'll put it that way. Looking at a lot of text about the passing of Burt Reynolds. You know, I mentioned that as on a tweet yesterday and then this morning. That it's kind of a, it's amazing to me that we talk about actors that can pull off their craft and be relevant over a big period of time, and Burt Reynolds absolutely fit mm-hmm. that bill. And you know, you could have we talk about Smokey and the Bandit, Cannonball Run, and Gator and Stroker Ace, and all. Yes, the car driving movies, I get it. There was a genre, and he was in that genre. He owned that genre of movies through the 70s and 80s. But here's a man who started off on the small screen, right? And he was in, back in the 60s, he was in Gunsmoke and Hawk and Dan August, and then Deliverance. Mm-hmm. And there, I mean, if there were cars somewhere in Deliverance, it's more canoes than it is cars in Deliverance.
Paddle Faster.
Yes. And then The Longest Yard. It's not about a car, right?
About prison football.
Yeah. Then Semi-Tough. Then, okay, yes, Hooper and Cannonball Run, Smokey and the Bandit, of course. And then it talks about some flop movies in the 80s, but he comes back. Until I read this in the Obit stuff, I had not thought about this. I didn't watch this show a ton, but I remember what a big deal it was. In the 90s, he came back, Evening Shade.
Oh, yeah, I remember Evening Shade.
And he was
was
that
on
not,
CBS?
You might be right. Okay.
I'm sorry.
You're probably right, though. If that's stuck in your brain somewhere, that means you watch enough promos as a child. That coming up on Thursday night on CBS, it's Evening Shade, which won him an Emmy. He got two nominations and one win for Evening Shade. Then when I'm talking about the Alpha and Omega, I go back to the car movies and the movies from the late 70s and 80s with Burt Reynolds. And then I bookend it on the other end with another one of my favorite movies. And no, it's not just... People say, oh, it's just a subject matter. It's the fact that it's an incredibly well-crafted movie, and that's Boogie Nights.
Mm-hmm.
from back in 97.
Mm-hmm. Great movie. Mm-hmm.
And he is a completely different character.
Yeah.
He's not a Southern guy. He's not racing vehicles. He's a completely different character there, which got him his first and only Oscar nomination. Back in the 70s, listen to this. We went through this list. The roles that Burt Reynolds turned down. You ready?
Say it. Do it. Go.
James Bond. And the quote from him said, an American can't play James Bond. It just can't be done.
Wow. Yeah.
He later admitted to regretting that. He once joked, quote, now in the middle of the night, you hear me wake up in this cold sweat going, Bond, James Bond. He also turned down the role of Han Solo in Star Wars.
Oh, man.
That would have been okay.
Harrison
job.
Ford's like, thank you very much.
Can you imagine that? I mean, and go back and rethink these movies with Burt Reynolds in the role. He also, according to the Obit stuff here, almost played Michael Corleone in The Godfather. Mm-hmm. That would have been a weird fit.
Yeah.
And Dalton mentioned it earlier too. The one he most said he regretted is he turned down Jack Nicholson's role in 1983's Terms of Endearment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and reading about that in the Hollywood Reporter obituary, you know, when they said all the roles that he passed over, like the Han Solo one, I expected one of those to be his most regretted missed roles, but that Jack Nicholson, the role that Jack Nicholson ended up playing, that's the one Reynolds said he most regretted.
Don't you think a person like a Burt Reynolds, you knew he was talented when he was alive, but now you get to look back and you realize how many things he put his name to, or maybe he produced. Seeing his background, I didn't know this. I'm on Wikipedia right now, and I know that those can be heavily edited.
Yep.
But his background is Dutch, English, Scottish-Irish.
Scottish-Irish,
yeah. Yeah, Cherokee roots from Michigan, my home state. I didn't know that until yesterday. And then his father, of course, connected to the service. They were in Missouri in Fort Leonard Wood, stationed there. So it's just very interesting to learn the texture of people who have such talent on the screen.
And before he started acting, he was actually a pretty good athlete, got a scholarship to play at Florida State, even roomed in college with College Game Day's Lee Corso.
That is the weirdest thing to think about, those two guys, college roommates.
Do you think Corso will wear his big mascot head in honor of him on game day?
That'll be great. That'll be really cool to see what Lee Corso has to say tomorrow. But Reynolds' actual college career was kind of tragic. He basically stayed injured. So he went to Florida State in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
That 1954, and he had injuries, and then a car crash cut short his playing career. His freshman season, he had like two touchdowns and 130 yards, but that ended up leading to his acting career because his football career didn't pan out. So he left, went to work in New York for a little while, returned back to Florida, and became a drama major at Palm Beach Junior College.
So he made that scholarship work for him. He got his education. See, children? Listen to that. And even if you get injured, your brain still works and you can still be educated. Looking at this write up here, it says, listen to this. So he wrote that he, while working as a dock worker, he was offered $150 to jump through a glass window on a live television show. He also worked, he waited tables, he washed dishes, he drove a delivery truck, and he was a bouncer at the Roseland Ballroom. That reminds me of Brad Pitt, who was a limo driver. Do you remember that before he became famous? And a lot of the people he was driving were featured in extra X type movies.
Oh, well, kind of goes back to the Boogie Nights thing for Burt Reynolds. Think about, and we mentioned earlier too, that Cosmo shoot from back in the 70s.
The bear rug shoot.
Yes, that the ladies like so much. The ladies in his life, a lot of them, but he was married twice. Once to Judy Carne from 1963 to 1965, and then, of course, most famously to Lonnie Anderson from 1988 to 1994. Their breakup was very, very rough, very nasty. Mm. As I said, part of the reason that he went bankrupt in 96 was his divorce from Lonnie Anderson. He did have one child with Lonnie, an adopted son named Quentin. She has released a statement too, quote, Quentin and I are extremely touched by the tremendous outpouring of love and support from friends and family throughout the world. Burt was a wonderful director and actor. He was a big part of my life for 12 years and Quentin's father for 30 years. We will miss him and his great laugh. We'll talk more about the passing of Burt Reynolds and a lot of text about this when we return right here on Mobile Mornings.
Hey, thank you, Kane. 836 on FM Talk 106.5. And this segment of Mobile Mornings is brought to you by LinkedIn. The right hire can really make an impact on your business. You could post to job boards and hope, with fingers crossed, that you'll find the right person for your job. But if you think about it, how often are you actually really checking job boards yourself? Why trust the chance when you can post your job to a place where people go every day to grow professionally and explore new job opportunities? And 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. I'm talking about LinkedIn. 9 out of 10 LinkedIn members are open to new opportunities, and yet most are not visiting job boards. You can only reach them on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs intelligently targets potential candidates based on insights from their behavior on LinkedIn and rich profile data that you can't find on a resume, like their skills, their recommendations, interests, even how open they are to new opportunities like yours. Your job gets in front of the right people. That's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds on LinkedIn. It's the best way to find the person who will help you grow your business. And right now, if you hurry to LinkedIn.com/WAVH, you'll get $50 off your first job post right now. That's LinkedIn.com/WAVH to save $50. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, you're closer than you think.
Right, 837 FM Talk 106.5. I had lots of texts coming in on favorite movies. Kind of ran down that list of them, but I think it shows that there are people from so many generations that are affected by movies that Burt Reynolds was in, and you know, some of them more popular than others. But I love this. Everybody's kind of going, well, here's the one you never knew about, and our buddy Ben too. He also pointed out here in the that he had a credit for Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Yeah, and I bet he made a lot of money off of that.
Probably more on that than a couple of films.
I'm sure.
Wow. He's a voice of Avery Carrington.
I think that was the main character, but I can't.
Like, I know nothing about that game.
I played it, but I can't remember the characters' names.
Well, I'm kind of surprised at you, Sean, because you forgot Sally Field.
No, I have not. But not married.
Right, not married. But,
yeah, I just said the two. I said he had a lot of relationships over the years. So I was accurate, as always, right? Yeah, a lot of relationships over the years, but two marriages. Okay. Sally Field, who I had a thing for.
That's why I was surprised. Yeah, so, I was waiting
she,
over
she
here.
She was a beautiful woman.
They said that they were partners between 1977 and 1982, kind of off and on for a couple of years. But here's her quote that I saw on Twitter yesterday. She says, "There are times in your life that are so indelible, they never fade away. They stay alive even 40 years later." She's now 71 years old. She said, "My years with Bert never leave my mind. He will be in my history and my heart for as long as I live. Rest, buddy."
You know, you go back and to go to Smokey and the Bandit and see the chemistry there. Mm-hmm. I know you can say, well, they're great actors, they could be acting, but I mean, you just watch it, you're like, yeah.
You know what that reminds me of? Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt before it was announced.
Hey, Dalton, do you detect a theme here? We've gone back to Brad Pitt twice here.
No, you know, I think because
we call
I
that
lived
in the poker world a tell.
No. Because yes. I lived in Kansas City, and, you know, he's from Missouri.
Yeah.
And so any type of B to the P, they always made sure that became part of our headlines.
Gotcha.
Bread to the pit.
Yes.
but no, they talked about how he stuck up for her because the director didn't think she was sexy enough, being Sally Field. And he said, but you know what? That talent is sexy. And shortly thereafter, they started dating.
That was... I wouldn't have wanted the character played any other way than the way Sally Field played. It was...
Sally Field, she's beautiful now, but you look back at some of her pictures, you're like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
Just like Lonnie Anderson. Remember on
KRP and CP?
Yes.
Sure. One of my favorite stories about Burt Reynolds that I learned about, you know, after his passing, reading his obituaries, when he was filming Deliverance, John Borman was the director, and during one of the scenes where canoe was going over some falls, they had a dummy in the canoe,
like a some kind of prop,
right? Like a prop,
not like somebody that, hey,
like
dummy,
a pool. Yeah, not like a pool
to keep anyone from being injured. And Burt Reynolds, he always liked doing his own stunts as often as he could, but he was asking the director, you know, why are you using a dummy? That kind of looks fake. And he said, well, it's in case one of you drowns. Or they were shooting the film in sequence, and Reynolds asked the director why. He said, in case one of you drowns. But he was using this dummy in this particular scene, and Reynolds said, you know, that looks fake. I'm going to get into the canoe. I'm going to try to do this myself while you guys film it so it'll look real. Well, he went, filmed the scene, crashed into the rocks, ended up in the hospital, and then he asked the director, Borman, how it looked on film, and he said, looked like a dummy going over the falls. So, I just thought that was an outstanding story.
Well, you talked about the injuries that he had. He suffered a knee injury in this first game of his sophomore season. He later that year lost his spleen and injured his other knee as a result of a car accident. So thankfully, he realized that football maybe wasn't his deal, but acting, he sure used his chops, if you will.
Now, look at this. Phil says his buddy played sports for FSU, and their athletic dorm is named Burt Reynolds Hall.
Nice. You know what? Speaking of Phil, we should have asked Phil Savage about if he had any Burt Reynolds info, because if anyone would know, Phil Savage would have known.
This is interesting, too. We're talking about our buddy Ben sent a bunch of links to me, but this one I really stood out, too. This is Burt Reynolds on sensitivity. This is from back in... Oh, gosh, is this 1986? Uh-huh. So you have 1986, you have Burt Reynolds and a very young Oprah Winfrey talking about sensitivity.
That's when she was known as O.
Oh, that's right. And I'll tell you what, we'll try to get this posted up on Twitter or something, because you got to look at the energy in the eyes here that he's... it's
you're
something.
A troublemaker. I see what's going on this Friday. You're always trying to bring some spice and heat between people.
Only on days that end in Y. Y'all listen to this.
What I find most striking about you, and just knowing you for this brief time, you know, in the past 30 minutes, is that you seem surprisingly sensitive to me. And everything that I've read about you and heard about you from other people and, you know, sort of like in the winds about Burt Reynolds, nothing that I've read or seen or heard had impressed me to be as impressed as I am with your sense of sensitivity.
Well, I think there's all kinds of sensitivity. There's a sensitivity to only yourself, which is kind of boring. And then there's a sensitivity to life and everybody. Mm-hmm. But nobody writes about that because that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know? They write about all this other stuff, and that sells newspapers. I mean, quite honestly, if anybody wrote a story, if I was on the cover of People magazine and they said the sensitive story of, I mean, they wouldn't sell any magazines.
Right. Would you say you're one of those people who lives your life with passion? Is that one of the ways you describe yourself?
Yeah. I don't want to go out having not tried everything twice, because you might have had a headache the first time.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that. All right.
You made sure the kids were in school.
That's right. It's an 8 o'clock hour special.
We were talking earlier about Lee Corso being his college roommate. Of course, Lee Corso from College Game Day. Listen to this quote. Corso said, "I was famous for one thing at Florida State. I was Burt Reynolds' roommate. With his looks and my car, we'd kill him in Tallahassee."
I just pictured those two out for a night.
That would have to be so fun.
And I wonder if what Corso will, I mean, you know.
I planted the seed, huh?
Yeah, it's got me thinking for sure.
Of course, it'd be respectful, but I mean, he has a unique vantage point of Burt Reynolds.
Well, if you were a college buddy with somebody, I think you get to do something that may seem, if somebody else did it, it may seem non-respect, you know,
right.
But when you have, I mean, you see this at funeral events, there's like eulogies and there's this level, and then there's like the old buddies that almost roast the person at their funeral in a kind of gallows humor kind of way. And it's, there's something
it's
really
fitting.
Good about that.
It's fitting since he played football and it's game day and Lee Corso is very much alive and he's got quite the personality. I'm going to have to DVR that one.
Yeah, that happens. Number one, you win for the call.
Yeah.
And we'll play that audio.
A best man speech kind of thing is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Where you can get out there and Corso can let us know stuff that would seem distasteful from anyone else.
Right, but Corso can do it. 8:45, we're coming right back. More Mobile Mornings. All right, 8:50, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along on this Friday. We'll be back at noon today for Midday Mobile, Laura Ingram Show, about 15 minutes away. Remember, you can check out this show's podcast, Midday, all the live local programming we do around here, which is a whole bunch, and we're proud of it. Check it out on our podcast page when you click the link on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. Talking about the passing of Burt Reynolds, one of the most popular stars of the 1970s and 80s, dead at age 82. There's so many texts coming in here, so many movies, and they're like the big starring role movies for him, and then there are the, hey, did you know he was in such and such? I'm getting an education going through those today as well. And then you mentioned something during the break here about the kind of his running crew, like who his friends were.
Well, before I tell you that real quick, 1978, did you know he had a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Yeah.
Early in life?
Yeah, because he was a big deal then, too. I mean, you would say, I would have been surprised if it would have been much later.
See, I thought it would be maybe more like 84, 85-ish time frame.
Yeah, I can see that as well.
So as far as his friends, so personal life, his close friends have been listed as Dom DeLuise, Jerry Reed, Charles Nelson Reilly, Tammy Wynette, Chris Everett, Tawny Little, Dinah Shore, Johnny Carson.
Dinah Shore, yeah.
Johnny Carson, Lucy Arnaz. It's interesting to see all those names.
I'm sorry, I'm just picturing.
You're laughing already.
Well, I am. So I'm picturing like they're hanging out at Bert's house or something. And there's Bert. Okay, y'all just play this in your mind. And then there's Dom DeLuise standing there.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you have maybe Dinah's there or whomever.
At the Burt Reynolds Ranch, which he had.
Down in Jupiter, Florida.
Wait, how do you say it? Is it Hobie Sound or Hobie Sound, Florida?
Hobie Sound, yeah. Hobie Sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Jupiter, Hobie Sound. It's, it is the north end of southeastern Florida. It's up from Palm Beach and all that. So he'd be hanging out there. They got Dom DeLuise. And then here comes Charles Nelson Reilly. Walking into the scene. I'm sorry, it's just too much for me. All right, grab some calls. Mike is in Point Clear and wants to talk about Burt Reynolds. Hey, Mike.
Hey, real quick, one of my favorite Burt Reynolds stunts was he was on Johnny Carson Live and he shaved off half his mustache to ask the audience, which half do you like better, the half with the mustache or the half without the mustache? And it was hilarious.
He had some great times on with Johnny Carson. Here's Bert talking about being on The Tonight Show.
We just had a fabulous thing going.
Well, it went away. We did have it at one point, but then it went away. All right, let's go to John in Mobile. Hey, John.
Hey, guys, listen, he was in a movie in the 80s where his character was like a general manager of some sports, Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
And he got a terminal diagnosis from a doctor. And so he decided instead of waiting on it, he was going to commit suicide. And this cracks me up every time I think about it. I use a line all the time. But he gets all these sleeping pills. I don't know where he got them all, but they're all different colors, and he had a whole fistful of them, and he put them in his mouth, and he chugged a gallon of milk, and he had a glass coffee table, and from underneath the coffee table, he spits it all out because he's like, oh, the milk's sour. And then he looks down at the thing the table with all the milk and all the pills, and he goes, God, it looks like Walt Disney threw up. I don't remember the name of that movie, but that was one of the funniest lines I've ever heard in movies. So,
I'm trying to think. Somebody will name that movie for us here in a second.
What year did he say it was?
What year was it?
In the 80s.
Mid-80s.
Was it called The End?
That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
Okay.
There we go. I mean, I appreciate your call. There's so many. We started to dig, and I mean, the text line, there's no way I can keep up with them, but people were popping in, and he was in this movie and a cameo here and there. I mean, there's so many.
And can't forget, he was in the remake movie of Dukes of Hazzard. He played Boss Hogg in the 2005 Dukes of Hazzard film.
The good old boys.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't see the Duke. You know, I was a fan of the show, the TV show. It never did translate into the movie world. Here's a clip I was trying to play a second ago.
We just had a fabulous thing going.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and he just let me go. I mean, and I was smart enough to let him set him up for a couple of jokes. Yeah. And then he would give me one.
That's Bert remembering Johnny Carson.
I have to say that I didn't come up with that. My husband, I give him credit for The End because he's a movie buff. Did you see that post from Wayne Dean, our very own Wayne Dean in town, where he played the double for Burt Reynolds? Yeah, if you hop on Facebook, we all know Wayne Dean as the other role he plays. I won't say it because I don't know if I'm sworn to secrecy or anything. Yeah, yeah. But if you hop on his page, go to Wayne Dean, he posted a picture when he played the double of Burt Reynolds. Here it is right here. Here it is right here. Look how much they look alike, Dalton.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Isn't that something?
That's really cool.
He says, so sorry to hear that Burt Reynolds has died. I spent one of the most enjoyable times working as his photo slash body double a few years ago in Mississippi. His film legacy will live on, but his future presence on the big screen will be missed for sure. Your earthly race is finished. Rest easy from your labors, Bandit. I'm going to post
that.
Well
said.
I'm going to post
that
on our page, okay?
So well said.
And we'll have to ask Wayne next time we see him if he actually filled in for Burt Reynolds on that Cosmo photo shoot, if they just subbed in Burt's face.
Wayne, I know you may be listening this morning. Yeah, that's our question. Were you the body double for the 1970s Cosmo shoot?
Inquiring minds want to know.
The bear rug?
The bear rug, right.
Sold 1.5 million copies.
You know how risque that was back then, but now... People are like, okay, and?
I want that to become popular again because, you know, those of us that are not hairless, we'll put it that way.
Would love
that to become popular again. So, you know, be like, hey, yeah, I'm almost just like Burt Reynolds. Well, I got the hair.
He ended up regretting doing photo shoot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because, you know, people would bring that up all the time. I don't know if he liked that or not, but he was upset that it drew attention away from Deliverance, which he thought was his first good acting role. That he thought Deliverance was the first movie where he was actually a good actor. And he felt like by doing that Cosmopolitan photo shoot, that drew attention away from the movie, and maybe it didn't do as well in theaters as it should have. Really interesting.
And I thought it was interesting that he looked back and said, you know, had he applied himself more, he could have been in all those major roles in films, but he just chose the easy way out because got him a lot of ladies and a lot of party time.
Well, that sounds like truth to me.
That's called grown up discussion.
That's for sure. All right. We will have some of this discussion as well going on during Midday Mobile today, starting at noon. And remember this weekend, I mean, we started off, we had Football Friday, right? We got that going. Actually, you start off with a coach's show. I don't know where we start our football week. We start Wednesday. We could start Thursday. We could start Friday.
Even Monday.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, do we end up on Monday? I was trying to get to sports night. Do we end up on Monday, or do we start on Monday with our football week? Because you could say from right now, of course, with Football Friday, Feinbaum this afternoon. Then tomorrow with the pregame and game being preceded by Prep Sports Report.
We'd
be talking football, then talking the game actually tomorrow afternoon with Auburn, and then going into, I'm sure our buddy Randy will discuss some football.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like it's football season.
During tea time. During Southern Fairways Golf. And then on Monday, of course, we'll be talking about it on the morning show, and you'll get a full recap, you and Corey, on Monday evenings for Sports Night.
That's right. We recap the weekend and look ahead at the week ahead. Man, I could just cry. All those sports shows you just said.
I mean, that's just part of what we do in a given week.
That's right.
Signed by D.O.
All right. Y'all have a great one. Laura Ingram is on next.